And ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another episode of the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. It is I, Michael, and joining me this week, he is the author of Red Rising and covers the Capitals for Hockey Hot Stove, and sometimes he just needs a hug, or at least that's what I tell myself when I'm crying in the fetal position. It's our good friend, Ted Starkey.
I'm still waiting for that hug.
I haven't been able to see you in person.
That's true.
You realize when we finally see each other at a game, we are going to hug. There's going to be pictures and video proof. It'll be like a TikTok or a reel that we're going to throw up on social media and go, it actually happened.
The hug.
The hug. And then we'll shoot additional content, like me crying in the fetal position and you just giving me a hug, going, there, it's okay. It was, we knew the coach's challenge was going to happen anyways. So, but speaking of coaches' challenges, the Caps are 10 games into the season. They're 0-3 on coaches' challenges. There's a plethora of other things we need to talk about, but we'll get to those in a moment because you just came out with an article on Hockey Hot Stove, properly titled, as I pull it back up on my screen, Capitals, Jekyll and Hyde Start to Season. I agree with that sentiment, good sir. But the one thing that we got to talk about is some coaches' challenges because let's be honest. Take away the Dallas Stars game where the Caps lost 1-0 on Frozen Frenzy Tuesday night. And of course, we're recording this at 10:30 at night on Thursday night, October 30th. So happy Halloween, everybody, because that's when you're going to be hearing this or watching. But we got to talk about the two weekend games. The Sunday afternoon matinee against the Vancouver Canucks, which the Capitals were... we're watching there. And then, of course, Saturday night against the Ottawa Senators. Those are the two big games that stick out that week, despite a really good 5-1 win over Columbus on the road. But it still doesn't erase the stink. And two of the biggest things that happened in it, one of which was a true momentum shifter, which was in the Ottawa game, were two probably ill-advised coaches' challenges on goalie interference. Quick breakdown of the Vancouver one. Evander Kane's crashing the net. He does crash in, but it does not prevent Charlie Lindgren from stopping the puck. The puck is loose outside of the crease. Lindgren is reaching for the puck, and then Wilson knocks Kane down, which kind of hits the puck away from Lindgren a little bit. Tyler Myers then scores. Now, per the rule, if your own player pushes the opposing player into the goaltender, it is not goalie interference. You and I both agreed because I think we were texting each other. We were definitely texting each other on both of them. And we were like, this isn't going to be successful. Fast forward to Saturday night. Caps, you know, Jacob Chychrun kind of pushes Shane Pinto into Lindgren. And of course, there's already a review to see if the puck had crossed the line, if before the net had come off the boarings. And so then the challenge came out about, you know, the goalie interference. Again, Chychrun put Pinto into Lindgren. So again, that's not goalie interference. They went and did a coach's challenge. Both counts, they lost. However, for the Ottawa one, that put the Senators up 2-0, then on a power play, which they then scored very quickly on. And then that just completely swung the momentum in Ottawa's favor. And I strongly believe that if you had not called the coach's challenge, just stay down 2-0, that would then be more beneficial for the team because you're not going shorthanded. And you have a chance to kind of pull back some of that momentum from the Senators. I've talked a lot about this so far. Ted, how do you feel about these things?
Well, it's interesting you talk about like the game situation because, you know, the Islanders, first road game of the year, they challenged a hand pass and they were up 4-0 4-0 heading into the end of the second period, gave up a late goal in the second. It was 4-1. Then the Islanders scored with the power play. So it was 4-2, and really the momentum was on the Islanders' side. They were unsuccessful, largely because, you know, the players were basically imploring him to challenge. And they killed off that power play. But, you know, obviously the Islanders made it 4-3. That's, you know, you're on the road. You still have about 15 minutes left. You're more than likely going to blow a point in a game you're up 4-0. You know, obviously Vancouver, they're down, and they risked, you know, going further down. And same with Ottawa. You know, when you're down 2-0, you probably shouldn't, you know, especially with that much time left, you know, it's is it really worth it? And I think what's kind of happened with the Caps is I think, you know, all three, the common thread was the players are very insistent to Carberry and imploring him to you know, to replay it. And, you know, not only that, they're burning their time out to review it. So clearly they're not really sure. And it's one of those things, if you're sure, you probably don't need to burn a timeout to do it. But, you know, I think they're relying less on the video team and more on the player reactions, which, you know, obviously players are in the heat of the moment, and it's probably not the best way to do it because obviously the video team has it. But, you know, I thought all three challenges, I didn't think anyone would be successful. And it turns out, you know, that's absolutely right. But, you know, 0 for 3 is not,
It's not
you
a good
know,
start to the year.
no, you got to be more selective with it, because I think it's, as I was saying before with you before we got on the air, like, you know, it's a bit of a crapshoot anyway. Like, I don't think there's any kind of clearing cut rule on what is going to count and what will not. And like we were saying, you know, two of the goalie interference ones were the guy who's getting pushed in. You know, it's you're never going to win that call,
Yeah.
unless the only way you win that call is if the guy basically falls over and, you know, turns
Embellishes it and all that.
right, you know, it turns a tap into falling completely on the goalie. But, you know, neither of these were even close to that. So, you know, obviously I think they should rely more on the video team and not worry about what the players think.
Yeah, and not only that, but here's the thing. Oh, and by the way, the Canucks did score on the ensuing power play as well. So it's like both times for the goalie interference side of things, it really did come back to bite the Caps. But
And then
you mentioned the
one.
hand pass one for the Islanders, and the interesting thing was is that, and you had said this off air too to me, was that because it was Schaefer's first goal, it's at home. If they had disallowed it, which they should have, because the thing is that, you know, the initial Islander pushed the puck with their hand, it comes out, Kyle Palmieri plays the puck, which right then and there the play should have been called dead, which sorry about that. But that's the one thing that actually surprised me about that challenge. As we're watching the replays, I see Palmieri's stick play the puck, which goes, well, if the play should be dead. Player play the puck, it's a hand pass. Not one person on television, not one, not even in the articles, the papers, whatever, not one of them, maybe you did because I told you about it via text message, said, oh, that was Palmieri's stick touching the puck first.
Right.
Nobody mentioned Palmieri's stick.
Right.
And that's the crazy part about that whole thing, because it was Matthew Schaefer's first career NHL goal at home.
And, you know, and Carberry basically said after that's what he thinks, that, you know, because it was his first goal, it was at home, you know, that was going to be a tough one to call back. And, you know, they reviewed that for a long time too. It was not like a clear cut. But the other thing is, it's probably one of those, had they called it on the ice, a hand pass, it probably wouldn't have counted. But because, you know, it's a higher threshold to have to reverse something like that. So I think that was, you know, it's early part of it. But like I said, I was joking. I said the referee would need a police escort to get out of the out of UBS if they canceled his, you know, his first goal on that.
Yeah, and actually there was a something that you had actually said before we came on the air, and I went, you know what, we need to start recording now because this is a great talking point. And the thing that you had mentioned was the blue paint rule back in the day. And of course we remember the infamous Brett Hull goal in the 1999 Stanley Cup final. Well, interestingly, Brett Hull and Kelly Chase now do a podcast. I think it's called like Ice Guardians or something like that. I've been seeing a lot of like reels on Facebook for it. And one of the interesting things is like one of the very first videos I actually saw of that podcast with Brett Hull was he was obviously asked about the foot in the crease. And he actually said that midway through the season, they apparently changed the rule, and the only people who knew that the rule had been changed were the officials and the general managers. The players didn't know, the coaches didn't know, obviously the fans didn't know, and the media didn't know, but apparently they changed that rule midway through the season and just didn't tell anybody.
That's very NHL, but I mean, like I was telling you before, I think I was never a fan of that rule. However, I think compared to what we have now is probably favorable because, you know, it's black or white. It's either in the crease or not in the crease. And I think now there's so much nuance to it. I've never thought there was any consistent call. And I think, you have wasted challenges because I think, no one really knows what they're going to call. I think you roll the dice and you hope, like you said, in those the two goaltender interference calls, the Capitals are trying to keep it to 1-0, and stay a goal, down only a goal, and ended up, they came up snake eyes and ended up going being down 3. And in the Vancouver game, that was huge because they lost by 1 goal.
Yeah, they came back. They fought back for that one.
And Vancouver lost 2 forwards and they were down to 10 forwards, and they dominated the late stretch. Obviously, Ottawa wouldn't have made a difference because they were
They were
flat.
buzzing. Ottawa was buzzing and the Caps were flat.
I mean, there was the lowest shot total at home since 2004 in that game. So,
Lowest shot total at home during the entire Ovechkin era.
well, it's all they've only done it 4 times in the history of the franchise.
Yeah, but the thing is, okay, 4 times, but the last time was 2004, which means first time in the Ovechkin era, which makes it crazier. So, super quick, because I forgot to do this at the very open of the show, the More Phenomenal Hockey Show is brought to you by Cool Hockey. You like the jerseys you see us wearing, or mostly me, on the show? Head over to the official NHL jersey retailer for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link of coolhockey.com/TXHT. Again, that is coolhockey.com/TXHT and order your NHL jersey today. I meant to do that after intros. Oopsies. That's my bad. Well, we're fired up. We're just like ready to rock and roll.
That's right. I'm a video review.
Under video review, Michael should have done the Cool Hockey promo at the beginning of the episode, not right now after goalie interference.
Promo interference.
So, but yeah, man, it's just interesting. But going over 3 on these challenges also kind of spells the story a little bit about the Capitals' first 10 games of the season too. I mean, look at the power play. They are 6 for 32, I believe I saw the number was, or
Yeah,
38.
they're
But they're about
21st.
eight. But they're about 18.8%,
Yes, and 21st overall.
which is not where this power play should be. Granted, we do know that they've been working on a lot of kinks, tweaks, whatever, since training camp, because obviously they're trying to ease Ovi off of the full 2 minutes of the power play, which he still does to an extent right now. They're trying to get new bodies in there. But let's just also be honest. I've been saying this probably for a while now. They're still playing as if Blaine Forsythe is running the power play. It really feels like Blaine Forsythe is still running this power play. And the problem with that is that it's a very predictable power play. It's a very slow moving power play. It's a very easily defendable power play, to put it nicely. What are your thoughts so far, not just on the power play, but also the penalty kill, because that has been struggling a little bit as well this season
Yeah,
so
no,
far.
I think you hit the nail on the head on the power play. I think it's predictable. I think opponents just try to get their, they try to get in the shooting lanes and then kind of dare them to pass and try to break up their passing. And particularly at home, I think they're guilty of overpassing. I think we've seen that this year. They honestly, one of the reasons the Capitals are a better road team is they simplify stuff on the road. They don't try to get cute. They don't overpass. And I think you see a lot of that on the power play. And we saw in the Dallas game at the end, they had a power play with 5 minutes to go. You had that almost disaster with the slingshot, which, the slingshot is just a gimmick that's, the
Needs
whole
to go
point.
away.
Yes, the whole point of the slingshot is to try to give the defenseman speed coming in the zone. They don't even use it for that. It's just a bad, it's a cheap pass that doesn't really accomplish anything. Only allows the, opponents to set up, and they almost had disaster on it the other day.
The only player that we've seen successfully do the slingshot isn't even the NHL right now. Might actually be trying to get out of his contract in Metalurg of the KHL, and that's Evgeny Kuznetsov. For those who don't know what I'm referencing, earlier today on October 30th, he was in a game, played 5 minutes, and then left and just watched the rest of the game in his street clothes because apparently he wasn't getting the ice time that he was promised. So.
Yeah. Oh, which is something, because you remember, he was saying, oh, I wanted to play in the NHL, play in the NHL, and then, oh, I didn't really want to play in the NHL, meaning I didn't have any offers to play in the NHL, so I'm going back to the
Well,
KHL.
not many offers, meaning I tried dictating what I was going to get and what role I was going to play on the team, and the teams looked at him and went, yeah, that ain't going to work here.
Yeah, well, not only that, his KHL salary dropped by, 90%. He's barely making, I think it was, we calculated that, Kaprizov, he basically is making what he makes in 36 minutes of ice time in one game for the entire season. It's equivalent, I think, $90,000. So it's, yeah, he's,
Still more money than me.
yeah, it's, well, yeah, we'll see how long it'll actually last.
Yeah.
He may not get his whole 90.
Yeah, but the thing is though is that this, like you said, the gimmick. It's a gimmick that needs to go away. And there's something that my father would always say, and it would be a quote that Fred Shiro would say when he coached the Flyers, especially those cup teams in the 70s, was that you always move the puck forward, you never move it backwards. And with the idea is that you always want to be attacking the offensive zone. You don't want to give the other team's defense a chance to block you out and shut it down to make it where you cannot pr move it forward. So it's like, and we've seen that with teams like Ottawa. We've seen that with teams like Dallas and some other teams so far. N not just that the Capitals have played, but in other games. Like right now, I have the Ranger-Oiler game on. And like, look at the way the Oilers move the puck. They move the puck quickly so the defense cannot get settled in. That's what the Capitals need to do. They need to be moving the qu puck more quickly to get, the team's defense to be moving around. Because when you get the team's defense moving around because you're moving the puck fast enough, guess what? You just open up scoring opportunities. You just open up lanes and stuff like that. And they're just not doing it.
Right. And like I was saying, the slingshot with the Caps is the whole point is you have to bring it with speed, and they're doing it. They're basically coming in. It's basically an extra wasted pass, which is pretty dangerous when you're throwing it back, especially because, again, it's predictable. They know the Caps are going to try to do this. The guy slows down, clearly is looking back, and all you have to do is forecheck the D. And it's happened a couple times, the last couple of years, with the slingshot is, someone picks it off and, gets a shot on goal. And
Yeah,
is
if I remember right, I think the Ottawa game, there were like three instances where I just was just like, it's like the moment you see him, see Carlson or whoever just go for that slingshot, you just like, I have a railing in front of me, so like my hands are like gripping that railing. I'm about to rip it out of frustration, like, why are you doing this?
yeah.
So.
I mean, the whole point of it is, if you have no speed, and it just allows the four defenders to stack up anyway. There's no point to it if you don't have any speed.
Yeah. And then on the penalty kill, I don't have the numbers on the penalty kill in front of me, but they haven't been as solid on the penalty kill so far this season either. I mean, Vancouver's a point of it. I think Ottawa got three power play goals against them.
Yeah.
So it was like, it hasn't been very, I mean, let's just be honest. We could take the tape of the Ottawa game and just throw it in the dumpster fire for all we care for that game because that was just bad all around. Except for Justin Sort of showed up. I liked his play in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I think you too. The other thing with the penalty kill is they've been giving up goals pretty much in the first 10, 15 seconds too. Like I remember I believe the Islander game, the first power play goal, I think it was not very long after the penalty was called.
And
And
if I
just doesn't
remember
work.
right, it was like that for Boston too, I think,
Yeah, so
in the home opener.
it's basically just a setup play, and they allowed the goal. And like you were saying, they were very good 5-on-5, but they were not very good power play or penalty kill. And I think, obviously they've as I wrote, they've been very up and down. Obviously the Minnesota game and the Columbus game, they looked very good. And the Vancouver game for two periods and the Ottawa game for the entire game, they were terrible. Like this, probably one of the worst performances they've had, like we were saying, in the last 20 years. So it's just strange how they've been playing. As I said, some nights they look great and other nights they don't.
Yeah, but we can both agree on one thing. The goaltending has looked great.
Yes.
Both Logan Thompson has been spectacular when he's been in goal. Charlie Lindgren, you can't put Vancouver and Ottawa against him. He got hung out to dry on both of those
Right.
games,
Yeah.
but he did everything he could to keep the Capitals in those games.
I mean, you look at Thompson's got a 939 save percentage. It looked really good. And like you were saying with Lindgren, I agree with you. I think there's just two no-show performances in front of him. He was not bad. They were just collapsing in front of him. I would think other nights, perhaps like the Ottawa game, they would have pulled Lindgren before, it got too late. But I think at that point, he didn't really want to blame the goalie on that loss, and it certainly wasn't on him because when you put 13 shots in the other net, you're spending a lot of time in your own end.
Yeah, and not only that, but the Ottawa game was also the second game of a back-to-back
Right.
because the Capitals obviously played the night before in Columbus, so Thompson had already played the night before.
Right.
So, yeah, it's very interesting. Ovechkin, 2 goals. He's got some assists, but he ain't looking like Ovi. Would you agree to that sentiment?
Yeah, but I mean, we all know that, historically Ovi's been a very streaky scorer. Certainly I think there's a combination. He's not going to quite get the ice time he used to have. He's not getting, like we were saying, the power play time he used to have. And I think there's a recognition of that. Like I said, I think before the season, I thought 30 goals this year for him would be a good number because I thought, and they're going to manage his minutes because he was awful in the playoffs last year, particularly the Carolina series. And I think, if it is Ovi's last year, they don't want him to be gassed by that point of the season.
Yeah.
Obviously he has not been great this year, although, we still don't know what the injury that kind of dogged him during camp was. He certainly doesn't have the speed right now, so we don't know if anything is, bothering. He would never say if you asked him, but it certainly looks to me he's slower, a little slower than normal. Maybe it's age, but maybe it's something else going on. Because,
Or a combo of both.
I mean, he's a player who would never say he's hurt, and he would not sit out a game unless he really was injured. And I think, he might have something bothering him. But again, like I said, he's a streaky scorer. He will, he'll at this point of his career, he'll go, score 2 or 3 goals in 10 games and then score 10 goals in 10 games. It's just a matter of getting hot, and it's.
The teams that he's playing against sometimes. Like he loves scoring against Columbus.
Right. I mean,
He
I would
loves
go.
scoring against the Islanders, and that's the
Well,
Halloween game.
yeah. Well, I mean, he's had, three of his biggest milestones in the last couple of years, or two of his biggest milestones in the last couple of years have been against the Islanders.
Could it be three?
Good. It's very, I think it's likely to fall this week. Although I was surprised it didn't fall his 1500, his 1500th game, but
Well, his
again,
1500 game was the dud by everybody.
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's like,
And
I
then,
kind
and well,
of.
not only that, but like you also have to look at that game too, because that's when Dylan Strome got hurt.
Yes.
And he got hurt early.
Yes.
And I don't want to like just pinpoint it, but like in a way, it was like 1-0 after the first period against Ottawa.
Right.
But you can clearly tell going into the second period by not having Strome back that it changed things
Yeah.
for the Capitals.
Well, what you do is, obviously if you lose a forward, then you have to kind of mix with the lines and you get with the line blender, and you usually get the cohesion you get when you can have consistent lines.
Yeah, but when we look at Dylan Strome, he's kind of the Backstrom
Right.
on this team. And when you take him out of the equation, your next guy is Pierre-Luc Dubois,
Right.
who is a more of a solid second line center than a first line center. And this is not a knock on PLD. And then you have McMichael, who's playing center. You have obviously Dow's your fourth line center, and
Right.
then sort of been playing center off and on so far. And, so it's just kind of interesting seeing it's like, there's a chance Strome might play this weekend. We'll
Yes.
see.
I mean, and
And
something
same
like
with
that,
Sandin.
right? I mean, something with like Strome is too, obviously it looked like a pretty serious injury. It could be something that he can play with that won't aggravate the injury, which would kind of be my guess. I don't know how effective he'll be, but obviously they did not look very good. But like I said, if he wants to play and they don't think that he can aggravate the injury further, then maybe they'll let him play. But We'll see. It's, obviously it's too bad they lost Ethan Frank again too against Dallas. He got put on IR today, so he's going to be gone for a while. And
Yeah, that was an interesting one. I remember watching that and I was like, all right, Ethan Frank, he's going after Rantanen. He's trying to get the puck off him. Good for him, good for him. Oh, he just literally skated his face into Rantanen's elbow. Like Rantanen stayed still. Like I have no fault to Rantanen at all. It's just that Rantanen's a big dude and Ethan Frank is a slightly smaller dude. And his face just went r smacked right into the elbow. He's, I know they like to do the whole upper body, lower body thing. Bro's got a concussion.
I
Oh,
mean,
ab 100%. He's got a concussion.
yeah,
And
no, I mean, it's unfortunate, but like you said, it's, he kind of ran into him in the wrong spot. And like you were saying, Rantanen did nothing wrong. He had his back turned to him, and it
he's
was just
protecting the puck.
right. Exactly. It's, it's an unfortunate.
And it wasn't even a reverse hit.
No.
That's the thing. He just stood there, he had the puck, and then next thing you know, Frank just pops
Yeah,
right into him.
he was planted on the ice, and got him in the wrong spot. And so we'll see. I mean, obviously, if Strome's not ready, do you entertain bringing up someone else? At some point, you probably want to give Cristall a look to see how he does. Give him a couple games, and kind of inject some different new life in this offense. Because that I was like I was saying, the Caps defensively been, they've only allowed 22 goals, one of which was an empty netter. So that's a little above two per game, but they were averaging 3.3 goals a game heading into the weekend. Now they're 2.7. They had one goal in 120 minutes, being a garbage goal by TVR against Ottawa. So obviously Tuesday, Jake Ottinger's obviously been very good against the Caps, but we'll see a lot this weekend because the Islanders are, they've kind of come off their hot start. Patrick Waugh has them now playing a more a wide open game than you're accustomed to seeing. They're not sitting back waiting for their opponents to make a mistake anymore. They're pushing, which may be difficult for them to sustain because I think besides Schaefer, there's not a lot of offensive talent to carry them 82 games. Obviously, Bo Horvat's had a nice start,
And thank
but
you for reminding me because the Islanders just lost to the Hurricanes 6-2.
yes.
And the one thing that I wanted to look at was, okay, so Matthew Barzal was healthy scratch due to disciplinary reasons for today. Now the original plan was to have Richie, don't remember his first name, but he's the rookie. He was supposed to make his debut tonight. They couldn't get there due to weather. Will most likely make his debut against the Capitals on Halloween. That could be an interesting thing where maybe Barzal is out of the lineup a second night to let Richie slot into the lineup for the Islanders. Because it's also interesting here because the goaltending for the Islanders, even despite their hot start, has not been solid.
Well, a lot of that is due to the change in style. I think, obviously the Islanders before this year had the Lou Lamoriello, let's protect the goaltender. So, guys like Sorokin would not particularly see a lot of good shots. But now they're playing a much more wide open game. So they're giving up breakaways, they're giving up high danger shots. And Sorokin, the last couple of years, I think he's been overused, and he's starting to show signs of it. Rittich has actually been their better goaltender in the first month, and because obviously Varlamov has not played and been out.
Well, he's
So
on IR still.
yes, so basically Rittich was their backup. He's actually played a couple of games for them, and honestly been more effective. Because as I said, Sorokin, he kind of broke down last year due to overuse. And now, like I said, he's not protected as he used to be. He's seeing a lot more shots. And I think
And it should
that's.
be noted that earlier this week, the Islanders fired their goalie coach.
Yes.
And well, first off, you don't need a goalie coach. I mean, look at who your head coach is.
Right.
Literally one of the greatest goaltenders to ever play the game, and Patrick Waugh. And actually, Patrick Waugh, what he did, I think it was like a week or two ago, he actually took time at a practice just with Sorokin and Rittich,
Right.
just to be like, hey, I should really give him attention. And especially the fact, hey, you're literally. Sorry, Martin Brodeur is not the greatest goalie of all time. It is Patrick Waugh. As you pointed out, the Lou Lamoriello effect.
Yes, and then
That, but.
there was a comment. I'm trying to remember specifically what it was, but he made a comment like if he was looking back towards last year, and he's like, "No, not at all." Like you could tell, he did not enjoy the style they were playing. So, I mean, I think that's what the biggest difference of the Islanders, though. The question's going to be if they have the talent to play this kind of style that Patrick wants to play, which I don't think they do yet. I mean, they're
Oh, not with the Scott Mayf guys like Scott Mayfield in the lineup. You're not going to be able to play that style.
I
You
mean,
need to
they.
get those type of the Mayfields, the Palmieris, the the older, slower guys, or the just big slow guys that they have. You got to get them out of there. But the problem is that Lou signed a lot of bad contracts on the
They have a
Islanders.
lot of. They're a lot team of second, third, and fourth liners. They really don't have a first line. Their second line is basically a third line plus, and their bottom two lines are maybe fourth lines. I mean, obviously, Schaefer's been terrific. He skates like a forward, but Ben, plays defense. He's had a couple yips. They've been playing him with Mayfield to kind of protect against these turnovers, but largely he's been good. But this is a team. They started off well. I think Schaefer gave them a boost to begin with, but they're not a team. They may hang around the playoff periphery for a little while, but they're just not built to play 82 games this year.
Now,
They're hoping Yzerman comes in and plays well, and some of the kids they drafted. But at this point, the Cavs have played well against the Islanders. They should be able to pressure them enough. And like I said, the Islanders don't play the style that frustrates Washington anymore. The Islanders would frustrate the Caps by playing the defensive, create turnover style. They don't do that. They play the way Washington wants to play, and so we'll see.
of course. Right now, it's a little irrelevant 10 games into the season, but the Islanders are currently last in the Metro, 4-5-1 with 9 points. Capitals are actually a point behind the Flyers because the Flyers did win tonight. So the Caps are currently sitting in fifth place in the division, but obviously, let's be honest, Pittsburgh's in first place right now. I don't know how much longer they can really sustain that for a full season. The Devils are two, the Hurricanes are three, the Flyers are four. I don't see how long they can sustain that either. Even my dad, who is a big Flyers fan, is like, yeah, I don't see the Flyers making the playoffs. He sees them as a bubble team, but he doesn't see them there. But then when you look at the Atlantic to shift into our Saturday night opponent, which is the Buffalo Sabres, the Sabres are currently sitting in seventh place. They have the same amount of points, but they have the tiebreakers over the Toronto Maple Leafs. So the Maple Leafs are sitting in last place in the division. Luckily for them, there's a distraction known as the Toronto Blue Jays of the World Series right now, but that's only going to last a couple more days. Go Blue Jays, by the way.
I was going to say that the Leafs are the Blue Jays' biggest fans right now because they lost last night with the win by Toronto. So
Yeah, they take the 3-2 series lead.
yes, so it's going to be it'll be a crazy scene and not involving the Maple Leafs tomorrow. I mean, and you think about it, the Maple Leafs, every other team in town has won a championship since. The Raptors have won, Toronto FC has won, the Argos have won.
The Toronto Six of the now defunct PHF has won.
Yep. So everyone else has won, and the Blue Jays, Toronto's a very bandwagony sports town, except for the Leafs. When the Raptors won, everyone came out. I saw the tickets for tomorrow to get into Rogers Centre are $1,300 American. So it's not a cheap endeavor, and it, so it'll be interesting. But obviously. The Leafs have kind of, the whole end of the season last year with losing Mitch Marner and kind of never really replacing him. I think really, they were always a team that were high octane. And, if you don't replace a guy like that, yes, he wasn't a playoff type player, but you don't really bring anyone in to put in the lineup.
Well, let's be honest. Their best player was never truly Mitch Marner.
Right,
Their
exactly.
best player has always been William Nylander.
Right.
Nylander's the guy who shows up in the not just during the regular season, but in the playoffs for the Maple Leafs as well.
Well, to use a baseball analogy, I think what happens when you lose a guy like Marner, it's puts more pressure on the guys who are left. You know, it's protecting guys in the order. And I think, you know, when you may are a little less dangerous offensively, you can concentrate a little bit more defensively, you know, on three guys versus four. You know, obviously, when you have four guys, you could split them up over two lines if you want. Three guys, you know, if you break them up, you're maybe not necessarily matching them with the right talent. You know, two and one's a little tricky. So, you know, and Toronto's got the same problems they've always had. They're defensively deficient. The goaltending is iffy. You know, obviously Wall's been out this year. You know, so you're asking a lot out of a team that's, you know, and you know, like we're talking about, you know, they're not playoff tested. You know, they're built, to borrow another phrase from baseball, they're built for October, which is not what you want in the NHL. You know, they're great,
Baseball's
but
October compared to the NHL's October, two completely different things.
exactly. You know, they're not built for April, which is, you know, they're not adept to dealing with blocking shots, you know, clogging lanes, and you know, they like the open ice, and you know, they don't necessarily have it. And then you talk about, you know, Saturday's opponent in Buffalo. They're a team that have, you know, perpetual rebuilding. They're already talking about, you know, possibly trading Alex Tuch, who is a lifelong Sabres fan from Central New York. You know,
Well,
you're talking.
not just that, but Tuck's in the last year of his contract, which is why they're talking about it.
Yes. I mean, he is the classic guy who would stay in Buffalo, and you're talking about getting rid of him. So, you know, the Sabres,
Well, I could see one thing happening with Tuck. He gets pulled into the general manager's office, which I would, if I was Tuck, I'd be like, man, I hope you're telling me you're getting fired because you're bad at your job. But if I'm Tuck, if I want to help, and we've seen players do this before in the last year of their contracts, they go, okay, you're going to trade me to this team. This is the value you're going to get. Okay, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. And when the free agency happens, I'm going to re-sign with you.
Right. It'll be
And
a, the
so
problem
I
is,
could see that happening.
the Sabres, I don't think, have the capital to do that. You know, like, you know, you look at these guys, like, probably the biggest disappointment the last couple of years for the Sabres has been Derek, you know, with Levi. You know, he came in, was going to be the goalie of the future.
They
And
shot his confidence to hell.
yes, they did. They mishandled him. He's now buried in Rochester. He's probably going to get traded before he gets a job with the Sabres, because
Yeah, because
obviously,
he's the number four on the depth chart because it's right now, technically speaking, it's Ukko-Pekka
right.
Luukkonen. Then it's Alex Lyon, who's technically like the 1A right now because he's been playing very phenomenal for the Sabres while
Right.
Luukkonen was out injured.
Right.
Your number three is Alexander Georgiev.
Right.
And now number four is Devon Levi.
Right. And it's basically, you know, I think we've talked about the Sabres before on the show, but they're a team that has a bunch of puck moving defensemen without any guys who play responsibly. And I just think they destroy, it's almost like Philadelphia and, you know, place where goaltenders go to die. You know, it's UPL. They wanted to make him a number one. I'm really not sure he is the number one. I think it's just, he's the best they had available, which is necessarily the guy you want to tie down with a big contract.
But at the
And
same time, we saw them say that about Linus Ullmark, and then look at what he ended up becoming with Boston and with
well, you
Ottawa.
Boston plays defense and Ottawa plays defense. That's the thing. It's like you watch the Sabres, they don't have, you know, they don't have a guy who shuts down opposing forwards. It makes life easier on the goaltender.
So, but the reason I also bring up the Sabres is because that's who the Capitals play on Saturday. So the Capitals play, tonight. At the because this is I'm going to be releasing this on a Halloween. So tonight, when you watch or listen to this, the Caps are playing the Islanders. Tomorrow, they play the Sabres in Buffalo. So it's an interesting. It's like the two games the Capitals really need to win,
Yes.
especially the fact that the Islanders is obviously a divisional rival. The Sabres is a conference opponents, so, you look at that for wild card purposes if the Capitals happen to be in the wild card race. So it's like, yeah, okay, we need this win over our Eastern Conference opponent because it's those points are going to matter. Those tiebreakers are going to
Right.
matter.
And you look at the Islanders too. I mean, their game against Boston, they were up 2-0 about 2 minutes in. Then they gave up five straight goals to lose. They're blown out tonight by Carolina, who's, you know, to be fair to the Islanders, they're a team that matches them very well because they use a lot of speed. And like I said, the Islanders are now trying to play a more offensive style, and they're really not equipped for it, especially against a team that's better at it than they are. And so I think, the Caps got to kind of push them while they're down. And in terms of the Sabres, the Sabres have played the Capitals tough in the last couple of years. Going back to the end of two seasons ago, when the Capitals badly needed a win, went up to Buffalo and lost 6-1 or something to that effect. It almost looked like they cost them a playoff spot. And they weren't particularly good against them last year. I believe they won at home in overtime. I believe they lost the beating up there
Yeah, I
at
remember, what was it? It was 2 seasons ago. The Tage Thompson, I believe, had the hat trick in the overtime game, but that was after the what's the name of that Buffalo Bills player that had the cardiac arrest on the field?
Hamlin.
Yeah. So like Hamlin, and I guess his number was number 3, and go figure,
Yeah, with
Thompson
a hat trick.
scores 3 goals in
Yeah.
a 3-2 overtime game. And so everyone was like, oh, it was a sign for Hamlin and stuff like
Right.
that. So it's like, I was at that game. That was an interesting one to see them
Yeah,
lose.
I mean, you basically look at the Sabres, and they're a perpetually rebuilding team. Unfortunately for baseball fans, it's kind of like what the Nationals are becoming. In terms of, they're already talking about trading the guys they got in the Juan Soto deal. So, the Sabres, I believe this is, you would consider this the fourth version of the rebuild, because you had the pre-Eichel version, you had the Eichel version, you had the after you traded Eichel version, and now you have the Owen Power version. And,
It
the
ain't,
team,
it just ain't working.
no, I mean, basically they, we were talking about talk is, like I said, the guy should be a Sabres lifer after coming over from Vegas in the Eichel deal. And, they're not a well-built team. They're another team with a lot of bad contracts. And so, for years they would spend to the cap. The problem was it was not a good cap team. Like, they would have to overpay to bring guys in or retain guys. Ville Leino was the famous guy who, they paid a ton of money, who was not worth it. But, they couldn't afford to lose him, so they overpaid him. And, it's a vicious cycle, but it really doesn't look like they're coming out of it. Obviously, I thought Levi would be a big difference maker for them, because he was phenomenal in college. I saw him a bunch of times in Northeastern. He has just never recovered from that confidence. And, that's just behind playing against a lousy defense. I mean, you see,
Yeah.
like you were talking about Sorokin, you see a lot more shots. You lose confidence in yourself, and that's what happens.
Yeah. So we're going to do a little transition, but before we do, the more phenomenal hockey show is also brought to you by Oats Overnight. When we're on the go but still need breakfast, Oats Overnight is the healthy on-the-go breakfast choice for the show and TXHT Hockey. Use our exclusive link in the description on both TXHTHockey.com and in the YouTube show description to try Oats Overnight today. I just got a subscription box. I have iced lemon loaf chilling, getting ready in the fridge for me tomorrow morning, or in this case, of were you listening to it this morning? It's good stuff, man. I'm staring at the box. I got some strawberry banana and some banana bread that I'm going to be making in the next couple days. I can't wait to have it. So with that, I want to transition, because we're talking about like teams that are having issues. A team that's still having issues is the Nashville Predators. And one thing that was on the sheet with Jeff Merrick was Greg Wisniewski brought up the thing of Jonathan Marchessault would probably be the best person for the Carolina Hurricanes. Do you think, if Nashville continues the route they're going right now, that a guy like Jonathan Marchessault, or dare I say, a Steven Stamkos, gets moved?
It'll be interesting, because last year Barry Trotz made such a splash going in, getting those guys, and they just never have gelled. It's kind of like, I think they thought they're closer to contending than they actually were. And you get a guy like Stamkos, you think, oh, he's a natural leader, a natural scorer, and he just never fit in. And sometimes players just don't fit in their locales. And obviously, yeah, I think if they struggle again, I mean, it's going to be 2 years in a row. They were hugely disappointing last year. And if you don't turn it around, then obviously, what's the core you're building around? It's obviously not a team that's going to make the playoffs. And it's It's going to be very interesting because, obviously with the salary cap going up, it allows teams to be very protective of who they want to keep versus former years. So it kind of raises the value of guys who do get traded because, there's fewer stars on the market. I mean, you look, a lot of the guys who are going to be free agents next year are signing already.
Martin Nagy has just signed.
Yep. So it's, the value goes up to trade these guys. So it's a lot more attractive for teams if you don't want to keep somebody to make a deal. And, as I said, Barry Trotz obviously was a great coach with the Caps, the Predators and the Islanders, but he has not shown a lot in the general manager level. And, I think he kind of tried to do the home run swing. He missed. And now you kind of got to figure out how to move some of these contracts.
And how to clean up the mess that you made so
Right.
you can, at the end of the day, keep your job.
Right, exactly.
Because Barry Trotz could become possibly the fastest general manager in and out of, I guess you could say, the cap era.
Yeah, well, you but in his case, I would think you become president or get some other role in the organization if you want it, because obviously Trotz means a lot to that city and that franchise. So he has a little bit more
He could be an ambassador.
right. He's a
He
little bit
doesn't
more
have to
rope.
be, he doesn't have to be in hockey operations. You can make him an ambassador.
Right. I mean, he's more rope than like say a normal guy would, but like so, as I said, still, his moves have not panned out, so you really got to figure out going another direction.
So another team, or technically in a way, two teams that are also not really panning out. We could talk about Calgary and how that's just the dumpster fire there. But two teams that are a little bit more surprising than Calgary is the Minnesota Wild and the St. Louis Blues. Both Minnesota obviously was in the playoffs last season. St. Louis, I believe, was too. And, they're literally 3-6 and 3, 3-6 and 2, respectively, for Minnesota and St. Louis at the very bottom. They're under Nashville in the Central Division. It's, and especially like you talked about how Barry Trotz made the big splashes bringing in Brady Shea, Jonathan Marchessault, Steven Stamkos to Nashville. The Blues made a big splash that same summer doing the offer sheets on Dylan Holloway and Philip Bjorkstrom to really booster the team. And they had great seasons last year. It ain't clicking right now, and it's very weird for not just the Blues, but for the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, sometimes it's interesting because you come in, like sometimes if you're a surprise team, you kind of expect things to go the same way. Then you play opponents who are getting up for you now versus, maybe they kind of overlooked playing these teams. But it's October. I think the biggest danger this time of year is you just don't want to fall too far behind the pack. You're talking about the East earlier. You're really not that far. There's not teams really falling that far out of the pack yet, but you don't want to get buried. Because if you're, I always think of like the five, once you get past New Year's, like there's a that 5-point mark is really, I think, what is difficult to overcome. Because especially with 3-point games, you really have to play at a good clip to make up 5 points, over like
So
20 to 25 games.
you mentioned 5 points. Right now, the Montreal, now this is a little out of date because I haven't refreshed it with some of the scores right now. But the Canadiens are in the top of the Atlantic with 16 points. Florida, Buffalo, and Toronto all have 11 points. So that's your 5 points that you had just mentioned right there.
Yep.
If I can get my mouse to work. I'm on. Work for me. So then in the Metro, you have the Penguins at the top of the division with 18 points. At the bottom, it's the Islanders with 9. So that's an 8 point or a 9 point difference there. 8 points for the Rangers because they have 10, and 6 points for the Capitals and the Columbus Blue Jackets right now. But there's still a lot of wiggle room because also, the one thing we're not also mentioning, games in hand.
Right.
Capitals have 2 games in hand on the Penguins.
Right.
So they could easily flip that script really quickly. In the West, Winnipeg, Utah, and Colorado all have 16 points. Winnipeg is the number one, Utah's number two, Colorado's number three. St. Louis has 8 points. So they're 8 points back.
Right.
Minnesota has 9 points. they are 7 points back. And then
Right.
you look at the and then you look at the Pacific. Vegas has 15 points. San Jose and Calgary both have six.
Yeah, I mean that's like I said, once you get to a certain point behind, it's so hard to make up ground, especially when you're chasing a bunch of teams. You know, so like I said, at this point you just don't want to get buried in the standings, because if you're buried in the standings, you know, you remember the Capitals are the first time they made the playoffs in the Ovechkin era. You know, they were 6-14-1, and they had to basically go at a high clip the last, you know, remainder of the season, and they barely qualified.
Yeah, the
So
reason they qualify was because they won the division the last day of the season.
right.
That was the only way a team from the division was going to make it in from the Southeast at that time.
Right. So it just you know, it just when you give yourself that big a hole, it's really difficult to make up. Even, you know, there's always the Canadian thanks or the American Thanksgiving rule, where, you know, you look at the standings on Thanksgiving Day in the US, and a good chunk of the teams that are in playoff spots on Thanksgiving are going to be in the playoffs. And that's only, you know, 3 weeks away. So you know, you basically have another, you know, every team probably has like, you know, 8 or 9 games before Thanksgiving Day. And, you know, you have a pretty good idea of where it's going to be. Obviously, there have been big exceptions to that rule. You know, obviously the Blues 2019, you know, they were in last place in New Year's, but generally it's very, very difficult for a team to make up ground if you're well out of the playoff race, you know, come Thanksgiving.
Yeah, you like when the Blues made the playoffs that year, they got every single break in the book. Teams that needed to lose games lost those games. Games that they needed to win, they won them.
I mean,
And
there's
not only
only,
that, but it was also a coaching change midway through the season too.
I mean, there's only a handful of teams I could think of offhand that have, you know, come off massive deficits. You know, I know the Kings, one of the years they were torrential down the stretch. You know, obviously, like I mentioned, the Blues, the Caps. But generally, it's very, very difficult. And, you know, it's going to be even more weird this year with the Olympic break, because you're going to have, you know, basically teams, you probably will see teams before the break try to make deadline deals so they can get them done and get players in the fold before the frenzy, because, you know, obviously the deadline isn't much after the break ends. So I think teams will try to get ahead of the curve with those. So you're probably going to see some good trades in early February rather than early March.
And one of the interesting things that Spencer Carberry said, and he said it at the season ticket holder coffee talk, which was the day before the home opener. He actually said that, like, for the Olympic break, while yes, it's a 19-day break of games, there is a certain point within the break where teams can start practicing again. So, like, to your point, teams may be looking at before the Olympic break to make those trade deadline deals, because what they can do is that they can then utilize that, like, I guess, week of the Olympic break where they're allowed to start practicing to kind of implement and do like a mini training camp to get everyone back up and running.
Right. And you look at
Because let's be honest, once they're like a week away from the Olympic break, teams are going to start packing it in.
right. I mean,
We've
and
seen the
look,
Caps do it every year.
well, I mean, the other thing too is, I mean, I think Washington's going to have the same thing as they had with Four Nations last year. You're probably going to have one or two players involved at most in the Olympics,
Well,
which
the
is going to be
Capitals did not have anyone last year. They're the only team without a player in the Four Nations,
right.
thankfully.
And you're probably not going to see anyone
You
from the
have
Olympics.
Ferravaris going to play for Slovakia because he is one of the six named.
Right.
Thompson is on the list of goalies. Even though he didn't go to the camp, he's on the list.
Right.
Wilson, we know, is on the list.
Right.
Obviously, Ovi's not going because Russia is banned from the Olympics.
Right. Carlson is probably past, you know, Carlson wasn't even invited, and he's obviously got a big history with USA Hockey. So that, you know, kind of a good indication. And, you know, honestly, you know, Carlson's going to be an interesting down the stretch, because he's clearly not what he was. You know, he's another guy in a contract year. And I think under normal circumstances, he was playing better. I think he would have been in the fold by now. And I just kind of think they don't know what he has left in the tank. And so I think it's going to be an interesting call by the Caps.
Yeah,
You know,
especially
maybe.
with Cole Hudson coming up after college, because that's happening.
Yes. I mean, you know, so it's like I said, you know, you look at all the other stars they've had, guys like Backstrom, those guys have all signed pretty quickly. Like they did not let this linger, and the Capitals do not seem to be in a hurry with Carlson. Maybe they're just being slow about it, but he has not been the player he was. He certainly was. You look at that, the series against Carolina, he seriously looked like he was hurt. He insisted he wasn't, but he was just ineffective at even slowing guys down.
Yeah,
And
one of the things I would do with Carlson is I would change the pairing slightly. I would have my first pairing be Ferravari with Chychrun. The second pairing would be would probably be like Sandin and Roy, which I think that is the pair. And then my third pair would be TVR and Carlson. I would bump Carlson down. I would put Chychrun on the first power play unit as the feed guy to Ovechkin, but I would have Carlson on the second unit
right. Yeah.
instead. Like, you got to start curtailing him back a little bit because, he's what, in the 17th season in the NHL?
Yep.
So, yeah, it's about that time you start kind of curtailing him, going, like, yeah, we're paying you this much money this season, but
Yeah. I mean, and he's had
You're
hard
not
miles.
a number one defenseman anymore.
Yeah, no, he's had some hard miles too. He obviously played a ton of minutes over his career with Washington. And like I said, it's kind of interesting that, it's kind of hasn't been said yet that, obviously he hasn't signed, and, Washington does take care of their own players. So it's not like, they usually don't let these guys walk to free agency unless they feel that, they don't worth what they're going to pay them. And it's going to get more and more interesting down the stretch if, he remains unsigned.
Well, my inkling, and you and I, we've talked about this before. I think the thing with Carlson is that there's the link with Ovechkin. I still feel in my heart this is Ovechkin's last year. And if this is Ovechkin's last year, this is Carlson's last year as a Capital. But he's going to go out via free agency, or they're going to trade him at the draft while they still have his rights so they can get something for him.
Right. I
It's going to be
mean,
one of those two scenarios. I see him with the team. He's going to go into the playoffs with them if they make the playoffs. That's how I see it.
right.
But if Ovechkin returns, that's where the real questions for me comes into play, because Ovechkin kind of gets that same leeway like the way Sidney Crosby does. Sidney wants Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang there with him. Sidney Crosby is going to get Evgeny Malkin and Chris Letang there with him. If Ovi says, because he knows he can't have Oshie and Backstrom because they physically cannot do it anymore, Carlson's the only other guy.
Right.
And he's going to go, if I come back, Carlson's coming back. And that's kind of where, I see it become more intriguing, because again, you got to figure out how you're going to fit in Cole Hutson,
Right.
because he's coming. He's going to be playing. I mean, he's tearing it up right now in college again.
Yep.
So, and actually, to be honest with you, when I look at it from a depth chart perspective of who I would replace to put in Cole Hutson, for me, it's not Carlson, because you want him there because he could be a mentor to Hutson. The guy who I see Caps potentially moving is Rasmus Sandin.
Yep. Well, the thing too with Carlson, I think I'm not sure he's the type of player who would want to take a hometown discount either. I think he knows the defensemen are well in demand, and if he can get a several year contract elsewhere for a lot more money, I don't see him having a problem taking it because,
I'm wincing at the idea of him getting a long-term contract, because it just makes me think of the Brad Marchand contract. It's like, Marchand's not going to play the full 6 years of that
exactly.
contract.
It's basically I, as I said, I think any, I mean, to be fair to him too, when they've signed, re-signed players, they have not been cheap. They have not had hometown discounts for any of those guys. Obviously, like guys like Oshie and Backstrom, their only reason their contracts worked out is they were able to LTIR them, and eventually, they basically over, they made the contracts longer than they needed to be so they could spread out the cap hits. I just don't see, I don't know if Carlson would accept a short-term deal even with Washington. if he, there's other options available. And I think with the lack of quality defensemen available, I think he probably could get a contract that's of a decent length from someone else, just because, I think he's a name. He's a guy they could say, well, he's a high, potentially could stay at a high ceiling. But like I said, from what I've seen of him lately, he's not, it's like the first part of last year was kind of like the swan song of his, what he could do, because he was really ineffective the second part of last year, particularly the playoffs, and he has not been overly effective this year. So.
So it and hey, we still respect Carlson for what he's done for the Caps because he was a big part of that 2018 Cup team. But you got to be realistic about things because whether people like to hear it or not, soon there's only going to be one guy from that Cup team on the roster soon, and that's going to be Tom Wilson. And it could happen as soon as next season.
Like I
So.
said, I will say with Ovechkin, I do think unless the Capitals bomb out this year, if Ovechkin's personal stats drop or he's unhappy with the ice time, I think he will come back for one more year. I think that if the team is a serious cup threat, I really have a hard time thinking he leaves, knowing that potentially he'd leave that one last cup on the table.
Listen, we can't wait 3 years for Connor McDavid to become available again, okay? It's just, come on, Ovi. We can't, we tried getting McDavid, but it didn't work out, okay? No, I'm just kidding. Next thing you know, somebody goes, oh, the Capitals were tampering. They're trying to get. No, they didn't. I was just joking. Come on now. So, but yeah, so we've talked to, we've got our hour in. We
Yep,
did good. We did good.
exactly.
So with
It is
that.
a late hour. We're almost in Friday, Friday, so.
Yeah, we're literally almost in the Friday. So this episode literally will not go out until Friday on both YouTube and on the website. But with that, Ted, where can everyone find you on social media?
Well, at Ted Starkey, and I'm also at hockeyhotstove.com. Like Michael was saying, I do a lot of the Caps. I do a column occasionally. I touched on expansion this past summer, and we'll be doing more stuff both on the Caps and the NHL.
Nice. And of course, for me, you can find me at the Lindenbaum 75. And of course, for the show specifically, just go to txhthockey.com or txht underscore hockey on Twitter, Instagram, and txht hockey on Facebook. There is no TikTok for the show. If you want the hockey content, you just go to at the Lindenbaum 75 because I don't want to create two accounts for that one.
Just look at the jerseys, then you'll find TikTok.
What was that?
Look at the road jerseys, you'll find TikTok.
Yeah, look for the home jerseys and the alternates and you'll find me okay. Hey, people love the videos of the players walking out for pregame warm-ups, and the ladies love the LT content during the first intermission when he does play at home. So, because where I stand, so for those who don't know, if you go to TXHT's Facebook, Instagram, and my personal TikTok, I do the walkout videos where the players walk out of the onto the ice for pregame warmups. That's always a very popular one. But the other video I do, because he does it right in front of me of where I'm standing, is LT splashing water on him. Like he takes his helmet off and he just like splashes the water and his hair just gets all soaking wet. And of course, all the ladies swoon. And so I just decided this season, you know what? Let me just put this up during the first intermission. It's like, here's your first intermission LT content. So I'll probably have that on Halloween. Here's your Halloween LT first intermission content. So with that, everyone, thanks for tuning in. He is Ted Starkey. I'm Michael. And this has been the More Phenomenal Hockey Show. And until next time, we will see you on the ice.